fall movie season is upon us, which means more movies aimed at adult audiences and those held back for awards consideration. That's great news for movie buffs, but is it great news for theater operators? Will these movies be good enough to draw audiences like the summer blockbusters? I'm Russ Simmons, and on the next Central Standard, the movie critics will take a look at the current crop of films and try to answer that question. We'll talk with people involved in the new movie Unlimited, which had its world premiere in Kansas City on Thursday night. Join the conversation and share your observations of the newest releases coming up on Central Standard right after this news. And good morning, Kansas City. I'm Russ Simmons, and welcome to Central Standard. Since I'm sitting in the host seat today, that means it's movie day here on Central Standard, and we want to hear from you. Have you seen any good movies lately? We're going to be talking about the ones that we've seen, and we're going to be covering movies that have come out over the last month or so. And we'd like your feedback at 816-235-2888. You can always tweet us also at KCURCST. I'm with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM, and I'm joined on the panel today by...
This is Loie Lockerbie. I freelance for the Kansas City Star and KC Active and have a blog at suchacritic.com.
And I'm Michael Smith with MediaMikes.com.
And we, as I said, we'll be talking about movies that have come out over the last month or so, but also in the second half of the show, we encourage you to join us because we're going to be talking with Susan Ruiz, who is one of the producers in the family of the Harold Finch family, who have a new movie called Unlimited, which opens in theaters today and had its world premiere at the Palace on the Plaza last night. This is a movie about Harold Finch, who is a local fellow and has a very, very interesting life. So we'll be talking with Susan in the second half of the show, so please join us. So I think, guys, we should probably start out with the big elephant in the room, the number one film at the box office that's had a lot of success, and I think I'm not... saying too much by saying it deserves that success. It's an action Hollywood blockbuster that's also kind of an introspective art film, and it's called Gravity.
Yeah, I barely even need to describe the movie. I think everyone's either seen it or seen the trailers, but it takes place in space. George Clooney and Sandra Bullock are the leads. He's an experienced astronaut. She is a scientist who's on her first mission and a little nervous, but doing all right. And then some debris from a destroyed satellite comes at them. And next thing you know, they're the only two left alive on the crew, and they're stuck out there and have to try to figure out how to survive and how to get back to Earth in, you know, halfway one piece. Mm-hmm. Alfonso Cuarón is the director, and he and his son Jonas wrote the script. It is one of those movies where it is worth it to pay whatever you have to see this thing in IMAX 3D. I'm sure it's great either way, but if you really want to feel like you're spinning out of control in outer space from the safety of, you know, a lovely chair with actual gravity, this is the way to do it. There are a few things more terrifying, I think, than the prospect of just being left adrift in space. And this movie captures that fear and the tension. I was exhausted when this was over. I mean, I was literally gripping the seat. It was so intense. I will say that it does get a little over the top as it goes along. This woman is like Job in outer space. Every bad thing that can happen to her happens to her. So, you know, I think they probably take it a little further script-wise than was necessary. It would have been nice if there had been less talking, honestly. But as a visual spectacle, as a technical achievement, and as an incredibly intense and thrilling experience in almost every way, this movie has it. So I'm going to give it probably 3.5.
Michael?
I agree with what Loie said. I think it's amazing when you have a 2-hour film that's basically one actor on one set and it still holds your attention. And, you know, I've driven down the wrong road and gotten lost. So I couldn't imagine what it's like being stuck out in space. And just that, like Loie said, they said that helpless feeling of, you know, I'm all alone. I thought that visually it was brilliant. It's almost, I'd say, like this year's Life of Pi, achievement-wise. And it was, yeah, brilliant. Brilliant's a good word. I gave it 4 out of 5.
Well, I liked it better than both of you. I thought this was a really remarkable movie. I thought it's one of the most impressive pieces of purely visual storytelling that I've ever seen and mm-hmm. that you're likely to see on the big screen. And this is the kind of movie that big screens were made for. Lo, you said it right. If you want to pop for the extra few bucks for the IMAX and the 3D, this is definitely a case where it's worth it. The special effects are absolutely seamless, but they're no better than Sandra Bullock's performance. I mean, I thought she just nailed this role, and she was completely believable. And this movie does a remarkable job of putting you in her space boots, mm-hmm. you know, really making you feel like you're sharing that experience with her. And what would you do, and what would you say to yourself? And I think a lot of those things are maybe some of the same things that Sandra Bullock is saying to herself in some of the scenes. In terms of just pure storytelling, it's brilliant. I think that it's maybe as good a film as I've seen all year, and so I'm going to go pop with my highest rating. I'm going to give it a 5.
Wow.
So between a 3.5, a 4, and a 5, we'll even it out as a 4 for Gravity. PG-13. You know, I did have a lot of people asking me because the tracking is supposedly that it's not appealing to women.
What?
That's the tracking.
Who says this?
Get it. So I would say ignore that. I think this is a movie for everyone. So don't worry that.
With all the money it's making, it's appealing to a whole lot of people.
Yeah. Even with the IMAX and 3D upcharge, it's still bringing in the crowds.
Once again, that's Gravity rated PG-13. So we're giving it a cumulative score of 4 out of 5 stars. And let's move on to a movie that opened back on September 20th. It's a dark, dark thriller with a major Hollywood cast that has a feel of an art film. It's called Prisoners. Michael?
Oh, this was probably one of my favorite films this year. It's Hugh Jackman, Jake Gyllenhaal, both giving performances that are incredible. I actually interviewed the director, and we talked about it, and he was kind of wary of Hugh Jackman. And he sat down with him, and Hugh told him that, you know, everyone knows me as either the nice guy or the Wolverine. And he said he could tell just in talking to him that he had this performance inside him that's just waiting to burst out. It's a great thriller. Anybody with kids can empathize with the plot of, you know, one day you come home and your child's missing, and just that uselessness you feel because you know, you're helpless to do anything to protect them, which as a father, that's your job. Like I said, I thought it was well made. A couple plot twists that I did not expect. And like I said, Jackman and Gyllenhaal give brilliant performances.
So what would you give it in terms of a 5-star
rating? I gave it 5.
You gave it 5.
Wow.
All right. Louis?
I didn't like it quite as much as you did. I think it's a great idea, and about 2/3 of it is really fascinating. The performances are absolutely first rate. I mean, if you ever had any question about whether Hugh Jackman could carry something like this, this will set your fears to rest. I do think that once it starts getting into explaining what's going on and the plot twists and things like that, it gets to be a little much. I think there's this tendency with thrillers and mysteries to just overcomplicate the heck out of everything just to have twists. And I felt like there was a lot of that going on here. But atmospherically, in terms of the performances, and some of the issues it raises, it doesn't really deal with them, but it raises the issues of, okay, you know, this guy's daughter has disappeared, his friend's kid has disappeared, he thinks he knows who did it, and he's going to torture this guy until he gets some answers. And, you know, it invites you on some level to identify and understand, but then also to question. But then again, you know, with all the plot twists and everything, it kind of tosses out some of those moral quandaries in favor of a more sort of conventional Hollywood. Before the press screening, they had a statement from the director explaining that this was really his vision, and there was no studio interference, you know, and it felt like he had to protest a little too much. And I think maybe there was a little bit of interference.
Hmm.
So I'm going to give it a 3.5.
Yeah, I think that in this case, as you said, a first-rate cast and kind of stomach knotting tension really elevates this movie. It's overlong. It really does wear out its welcome, I thought, after a while. But it does have all those strengths that you've always already pointed out. And Viola Davis and Maria Bello make the most of a very small roles as the wives of the husbands that may be doing these things, and they maybe opt to, you know, look the other way. And what would you do in that situation? And that's really the strength of this movie, is bringing up those moral conundrums that you will later want to talk about at post-movie coffee talk. And so whenever a movie does that, I got to give it a lot of props. And so I'm going to go as far as a 4 for Prisoners, rated R, and it does earn that R rating. It is a dark, dark movie. I say that with the ratings that we've got from the three of us, we can probably average it out to a 4. Does that make sense to the whole gang? We're all comfortable with that. So that's Prisoners, rated R. Once again, you're listening to Central Standard here on KCUR, and we are talking about movies that have come out over the last month or so, and we'd like you to join the conversation. Have you seen Prisoners? What did you think? How about Gravity? What was your take on Gravity? Give us a call at 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCURCST. We want to hear from you. Let's move on to another movie. This one that opened back on September 21st. It's a offbeat comedy called Don John. Loie?
This is Joseph Gordon-Levitt's debut as a director and screenwriter. He also stars in the film as this sort of he's like somebody who walked out of the Jersey Shore TV
exactly.
series, you know? He's this studly guy who gets a beautiful woman every night, but it's not satisfying for him. He'd rather watch porn online because he can indulge his greatest fantasies and doesn't have to deal with actual people with actual needs. This begins to change when he meets Scarlett Johansson, who begins to sort of transform him into a boyfriend. But it turns out she has somewhat unrealistic expectations, too. She's a big fan of Hollywood romantic comedies, and she wants to mold him into this sort of perfect rom-com boyfriend. And this leads to the central conflict, which gets complicated even more when he meets an older woman played by Julianne Moore who, she seems like a real flake, but she's actually probably the wisest person in the movie when it comes to relationships. It's very funny. It's very over the top, but it's still funny. It brings up a lot of interesting things about how sexuality saturates media, and it's so much around us that it gives people ridiculous expectations. I think it's a really, really great start to Gordon-Levitt's directing and screenwriting career. I think he has a little work to do to maybe be a little more sophisticated in his screenwriting. The humor is very, like, pound you over the head, but it is funny. I got to give props to Tony Danza for playing yes. his father. So funny. It could be a good little comeback role for him. So I think I'm going to give it a 3.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. The one criticism that I have of the movie is that the ending seemed very abrupt, and all of a sudden we're moving right along with the storyline. All of a sudden, the end. But at the same time, I do have to give some credit to Joseph Gordon-Levitt for being willing to do something this edgy and smart in his directing and writing debut. On the other hand, I do have to admit that this movie kind of has a tendency to skirt on becoming the very porn that it's criticizing, because it does have those scenes that you know grandma and grandpa probably wouldn't necessarily want to see on the big screen. We can get the idea that he's looking at that without actually showing it. But
it's super raunchy. It's one of the raunchiest movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, so I wanted to warn people about that. It is rated R, and it does deserve that R rating. So I think that's something that people need to keep in mind. But I thought also at the same time that it was well done, and it's kind of an interesting take on that topic of sex addiction, porn addiction. And so I'm giving it a 3 as well. So that's Don John, rated R. And let's bring in Deontay, I believe it is, into the conversation, who wants to tell us about a movie. Welcome aboard.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the sequel to Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Is Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2.
Yeah.
I absolutely love this movie. I don't know if it's just me being quirky and goofy, but I went and seen it with a buddy of mine who's also in his, like, late 20s, and his 4-year-old son. It was just absolutely fun. We went and seen it in 3D, and definitely recommend it for families, even for people like a couple in their 20s. You definitely will enjoy this film, especially in 3D. It was absolutely, absolutely entertaining, and couldn't ask for more out of an animated film. They did wonderful with the CGI in it, and it was the most impressive animated film I've ever seen.
Wow.
So, obviously, you liked it better than the first one, then.
Oh, well, it was. I didn't see the first one in 3D, so maybe I didn't get the full experience. I did see it, though. And,
yeah.
The first one, just in comparison, how they spun off of where they left us off with the first one. It was so much fun. It was so funny. All the little jokes they do. They have this food machine goes wrong that was mass producing food, and it goes wrong and then it breaks down, and then there's basically this villain that tries to come over and take advantage of the situation. The island that the people have stayed on ends up getting taken over by these animals. They end up coming to life. And the names they gave them were just so adorable. It was so cute. It's definitely a family film that everybody should go see. And please, please see it in 3D, because you're not going to get the full experience that I got.
Hey, thanks so much, Deontay. Appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, now we're going to go to Mike, who has a question. Mike in Kansas City, welcome aboard.
Hello?
Mike, are you there? Yeah, go ahead.
I went to the DVD release party last evening. It's a movie called We Are Superman.
Yeah.
And I just want to know if you guys have any comment on that movie.
I have not had a chance to see that, but I'm glad it's out on DVD. Can you tell us a little bit about it? What's the background?
It's the background of the transformation of 31st and Troost.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so riveting of a movie. It just reaches into your soul and grabs your emotions and just shakes you.
It's about a pretty important topic on a local level.
Yes.
Go ahead.
It's just the transformation, just the truce division there.
Yeah.
And, you know, people, the history of it, it's the dividing line.
So the release party was last night, so is it available widely now so people can go to their local video store and get a copy?
I believe so, and you can Google it online, online sales of it, the DVD. And a local producer, Kevin Rice, did magic.
Great.
And
it's anybody in the Kansas City area, you know, you're in it, whether you want to be or not.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Right. Hey, thanks so much, Mike. Appreciate your call. All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Okay, now we're going to Lee Summit to talk with Bill. Welcome aboard, Bill.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about Gravity. I saw it the other night with my wife, and it was amazing. We saw it in 3D. Didn't see it in IMAX. Wish we had seen it in IMAX, but probably the most technically proficient movie I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
It is seamless, isn't it?
Yeah. The pacing was perfect. It was beautiful. Sandra Bullock did an amazing job. You know, she's not one of my favorite actresses, but she definitely deserves at least a nomination for this role. It was just, I walked out of there completely stunned. I thought it was going to be a lame 127 hours in space, and it was not. It was not.
Yeah, that's an interesting comparison. Hey, thanks so much. Appreciate your call, Bill.
Thank you.
All right, let's jump back in and talk about a couple of other movies here that we want to get in before the break. And once again, we want to remind you that Susan Ruiz, whose father, Harold Finch, is the subject of the new film Unlimited, will be joining us. And so we want to hear from you in that regard as well. So let's talk about a movie that is Ron Howard's latest film. It's an action and character study drama called Rush. Mike?
Well, when I was a young man growing up, there was no pay-per-view or cable television. So a lot of the sports action you got was off Wide World of Sports, and you either had cliff diving or the Globetrotters or Formula One racing.
That
so,
poor skier.
Yeah, kept the agony of defeat. But this was a subject that I was familiar with from having watched that as a teenager. Basically, it's the true story of the 1976 Formula One World Champions. It's James Hunt from England and Austrian Niki Lauda. And they had a similar drive, but it was driven by different reasons. Hunt enjoyed being the playboy, good-looking guy. Didn't concentrate as much. He really drove on raw talent, where Lauda would always was a perfectionist, always practicing, always trying to get better. The film centers around a horrific crash that Lauda suffered towards the end of the season, and then they kind of come together to inspire each other. Hunt going for the championship, and just the fact that he's going for it is what inspires Lauda to literally get out of his hospital bed and put a helmet back on. Ron Howard, once again, one of my favorite filmmakers. I thought he did an excellent job. He literally puts you inside the cockpit of the cars. And this is another one, like Gravity, it takes you there. You actually feel like you're going around the track at 200 miles an hour. Hmm.
So out of 5 stars, what would you give it, Mike?
I gave it 5.
Gave it a 5. Wow. Well, it's a slick, workmanlike movie that is you would expect from Ron Howard. It's an engaging action flick about this fierce rivalry that is like the Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier of the Formula One world. But I understand from people I've talked to that it is highly fictionalized. Whether that won't detract from your enjoyment of the film, obviously, but it is somewhat formulaic. So I can't give it go all the way up to a 5. But it does manage to add some horsepower, if you will, if you'll forgive me, to a kind of a predictable and compelling story. So I'll give it a 4. So for between you and me, Mike, we'll give it a 4.5 out of 5 for Rush, and that is rated R. And we had a note sent to us from Sergio, who writes us on email, which is centralstandard@kcur.org. And he says, I saw Gravity in IMAX 3D, and it blew my mind. Sandra Bullock carried the movie and kept me on the edge of my seat. Thank you so much for that. We appreciate it. And, Lloyd, before we go to a break, let's also talk about a romantic comedy for older adults. Mm-hmm. It's a movie called Enough Said, rated PG-13.
Well, this is one of James Gandolfini's last movies, so there's something very bittersweet about watching it because, by all accounts, the character here is more like his real personality than anyone he ever played. He and Julia Louis-Dreyfus play a couple of Los Angeles residents who are both divorced, are both a little gun-shy about relationships. They've got kids getting ready to go off to college. It's a very transitional point in their lives. But they start this kind of halting romance. And it's an incredibly, incredibly sweet relationship. I'm a tough sell when it comes to romantic movies.
I know
because
you
they're
are.
usually so contrived, and you just never buy it. But this relationship, I bought it all the way through. I was rooting for them, and I just found them to be such a lovely couple. But there's a hitch. She has become friends with a woman who spends a lot of time complaining about her ex-husband. Well, guess who the ex-husband turns out to be. So it's a little sitcom-y in that regard, but it really is just a beautiful film in so many ways. And it seems like a nice kind of tribute to Gandolfini and what he could have done if he'd been able to continue this sort of post-Sopranos career that he was trying to build. So I loved it. Almost entirely, I'll give it a 4.5.
Wow, that's very impressive.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time you gave a movie that high a mark. But I would say that, this is also a movie about empty nests. Mm-hmm. And here are these two middle-aged people who are facing a real emotional hole in their lives when their daughters, who are roughly the same age, are both going off to college and leaving them behind to struggle on their own. And that's something, of course, a lot of people can relate to. But I think that this is a movie that is funny enough and sweet enough that it can appeal to a younger audience as well. Yes, it's definitely aimed at the older demographic because obviously that's the cast that it's relating to. But at the same time, I thought it was sweet, particularly well acted. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who of course we know from Seinfeld and from Veep, she still has that comic timing that obviously she's been able to hone for a long, long time. But there's a little more realistic edge to her performance than you usually see in the sitcoms.
Yeah, and even though, like I said, the plot gets a little sitcom-y after a while, she's good at handling that. So,
yeah, and James Gandolfini, supposedly, this is a part that's much more like his real personality. And so it is kind of a sweet homage to him and goodbye. So we really appreciate that as well. So did you say you give it a 4.5?
Sure.
I'm going to give it a 3.5. So between the two of us, we'll give it a 4. Okay. And that's for Enough Said, rated PG-13. We have some announcements that we're going to make, upcoming movie special things going on in the Kansas City area. We'll be talking about right after the break. And also, we'll be talking with Susan Ruiz, whose family has produced a new movie called Unlimited that had its premiere last night in Kansas City and will be playing around town starting today. We'll be right back. And welcome back. You're listening to Central Standard here on KCUR-FM. It's Movie Day. We're covering movies that have come out over the last month or so. And we'll also be talking shortly with Susan Ruiz, who is the daughter of Harold Finch, who's the subject of a new movie called Unlimited. And we'll be bringing her into the conversation very soon. I did have a few announcements that I wanted to make. One of the movies we'll be talking about shortly is called Inequality for All, which is a documentary that won a special jury prize at the Sundance Film Festival. It covers the contemporary economic scene, seen through the eyes of policy expert Robert Reich, who was the former labor secretary under President Clinton. But there is going to be a special Kansas City community panel discussion following opening night. That's tonight, 7:30 show at the Tivoli. And so you can find out more information at our website, kcur.org. And also at the Tivoli, Vermeer and Music, The Art of Love and Leisure, which will have various dates and locations, including the Tivoli, a major exhibition from the National Gallery in London. There's also an ongoing series at the Tivoli called Movies About Making Movies with our pal and cohort, UMKC film professor Tom Poe. And coming up, Lost in La Mancha, a documentary about filmmaker Terry Gilliam's ill-fated attempt to screen that classic movie. That's on October 17th. And also Living in Oblivion, a comic drama inspired by Tom DeSillo, the director's experience making his first movie, Johnny Suede, with Brad Pitt. It stars Steve Buscemi. And more information, again, is at our website, kcur.org. Also, the Kansas International Film Festival just wrapped last night, and the winners of the documentary are Small Thing, about a 9-year-old Liberian girl who suffered complications from a rape, and because she sought outside help, she and her mother were shunned. And the narrative winner was The K Effect, Stalin's Editor, a fictional hybrid movie about a childhood friend of filmmaking pioneer Sergei Eisenstein, who became a spy in Hollywood. Sounds intriguing.
Yeah.
At some point in the very near future, those films will be shown again at the Glenwood in Overland Park. And there are free movies at the library, both the 1969 John Wayne and 2010 Jeff Bridges versions of the classic Western True Grit are going to receive multiple screenings at various locations. And Horror Filmed, a movie shot at Kansas City's Chamber of Poe Haunted House in the West Bottoms, is going to have its world premiere tonight, Friday, October 11th, at the Alamo Draft House downtown. I know it's a little late in the game, but you may be able to get passes for tonight's screening. There's more information, again, at kcur.org. And finally, Cinema KC presents Withered World, the complete webisodes, one night only, Thursday, October 17th. And that's at the Screenland in Crown Center. And there will also be a mixer with the filmmakers at 7:30. And the show is at 8:30 p.m. And we'll have all that information and more at kcur.org. I mentioned earlier that we were going to be joined by Susan Ruiz. She is the daughter of Harold Finch, who's a very, very interesting gentleman. He's had a very colorful life, and part of that life has been worked into a film called Unlimited. And Susan Ruiz joins us right now. Hi, Susan. Welcome aboard.
Hi, thanks. Good morning.
Good morning. I had an opportunity to go to the film last night, and was very entertaining. And I did notice that that there were a lot of people there, including your father, who were involved in the film. And I would like to know if you would just fill us in a little bit on this family production. I mean, you, your brothers, your dad are all involved in the production of this film. Why did you decide to do it in this manner?
And my mom as well. And thank you so much for attending last night.
Well, sure.
How it came about is 4 years ago, movie makers approached my dad out of the blue and said, "You've got an interesting life story. Would you be interested in letting us kind of make a movie around it?" And he was caught off guard by that, naturally, and kind of talked about it with the family. And we said, "You really should go for it. And we'd love to see, you know, parts of his life documented like that." And So he went along with it, and he became executive producer in order to be able to read the script and make sure that he agreed with what was being written, and our family has championed around him.
Give us a little bit of his bio. What's the background of Harold Finch, and why should we be interested in his life?
Well, I think for Kansas City, it's a true dream come true to see one of our own, you know, be in movie theaters. They say there's a 1 in 600,000 chance that a movie makes it to the theaters. And Harold Finch, my dad, was born here in Kansas City, raised here, and he still lives here. And he had a rough start in life. He was born in the Great Depression and had a lot of things going against him. But he had a wonderful, loving mom, one person who believed in him and said he could do anything that he wanted to do if he worked hard and used integrity. And he did just that. When he was in his 20s, he went on to work at Midwest Research Institute, now called MRI Global, on the Plaza. And they were mainly doing agriculture projects at that time. And he suggested a proposal to NASA to help get man safely to the moon. And they said, sure, go for it. You know, you could submit the proposal. And sure enough, he went to Houston, and his proposal was actually selected. And he invented the barbecue roll at the age of 28, became a project director of the Apollo heating program. And then after years of doing that, he made a radical change and founded Johnson County Community College, and then later Paget Thompson and Cottage Care, which became Inc. 500 companies. But I think what makes his story really special is what happened in his retirement.
And before we move on to, and I would like to touch on what he did in his retirement, but I noticed from the film last night, and also from, I remember, Apollo 13, them talking about the barbecue roll. Can you explain to us what that is?
Absolutely. He was inspired. Well, his thesis for his master's before getting his doctorate was predicting satellite temperatures. But he was trying to think, how can we get mankind safely to the moon without them burning up or freezing up with the extremes? And he was sitting in a barbecue restaurant one day here in Kansas City and saw the spinning rotisserie of meat and had the idea come to him that why not be able to spin the spacecraft in the same manner on its longitudinal axis and slowly turn it so that heat and cold are evenly distributed and keep the astronauts and the spacecraft very comfortable.
And, of course, that's been used ever since, right?
Absolutely, it has. And in you referenced to the movie Apollo 13 when Tom Hanks made the mention of let's do the barbecue roll. And we were watching the movie when we didn't know that was going to be in there. And it was just incredible to hear that line.
Now, you mentioned something about what he's done that's remarkable in his retirement. What might that be?
Well, when he retired, he took a trip to India with other members of the family and worked in an orphanage. And it absolutely changed his life. It really gave him a focus for his retirement, which started about 28 years ago. And he was in this orphanage, and, I mean, these are kids, of course, born in the lowest caste of India with everything going against them. And here he had been inspired by just one person in his life that he could do something. And he spent that time, you know, really encouraging these kids, and when it was time to go, it was very hard for him. And one girl wrapped her arms around his neck and gave him a tight hug and said, "My daddy." And that moment changed his life. That pretty much launched him going into a 30-year kind of giving back and inspiring young people and adults alike to believe in yourself and don't let anybody else hold you back. One of the kids that he met 28 years ago in that orphanage is now running the orphanage, and he stays in regular contact with them, and he's just very inspiring and very motivating.
Now, this film... I'm going to categorize it, and correct me if you think I'm not doing this correctly, but it's a fictional story that's sort of a crime thriller, science fiction adventure that just happens to feature a real-life person in one of
the
roles.
That's an excellent way of describing the movie.
But the action takes place south of the border in Mexico.
Right.
And there is
absolutely.
There's a young man who is helping out his former professor. He comes down to Mexico to meet his former professor who's working on a machine that has the potential for creating unlimited energy. And he gets in trouble with some of the drug cartel people who want to use this for their own nefarious means.
Right. And yes, and Fred Thompson, who we were so excited to get involved on this project, plays the role of my dad, as you saw, as Harold Finch. And is working in an orphanage in Mexico, which in real life was India, but for the movie is set in Mexico, and he is the person to help guide this fictional character, Simon. Basically, Simon thinks he's going to change the world with his device and learns he really just needs to change himself.
And did your dad ever himself work on these kinds of projects, this energy science that is kind of predominant in this movie?
He's always been very interested in Tesla and the work of Tesla and energy. He didn't necessarily work on a project like that, but he has worked on a lot of physics projects. He was in the Air Force. He did a lot of top secret projects. And he has had a lot of involvement in science all throughout his lifetime, even in his retirement. But not exactly like this device, but inspired this movie and the Tesla-like device in this movie.
Well, now, your dad, as you mentioned, has had a very colorful and interesting life. Why not do a straight-ahead biography? Why decide to do a fictional film?
Well, I think that's a really good question. In the beginning, we thought it would be a little bit more biographical, but because of the odds of a movie making it, being 1 to 600,000 in a theater, they just knew the formula that they felt would get this movie into theaters, and that was to add some fiction and some drama to attract all audiences.
And how did Fred Thompson get involved? Fred Thompson, of course, is the former U.S. senator who also was an actor famous for mainly his recurring role in Law & Order. How did Fred Thompson become involved?
Well, he was at the top of the list, and they really wanted Fred to be a part of this movie. And when they contacted his agent, and then Fred read the script, he loved it. He said it would be a joy and an honor to play a real-life guy. And just kind of a down-to-earth man, and he was really excited about it. It was actually pretty easy to get Fred on board with this project, and that to me is pretty surreal because I did see Fred in many movies throughout the years, and I never dreamed he'd be playing my dad in a movie, so it was really an exciting experience.
And where were you, Susan? I was looking at the film, looking for Fred, for Harold's children. Where were Harold's children?
Okay, my daughter plays the role of a baby. If you happen to catch a baby in the couple scenes last night, that was my daughter. We were on the set, and they needed a baby, so that was an exciting experience. And what is funny about that is nobody else would know this except me, but I was kind of hiding in the doorway, and if I look really carefully, I could see myself.
And I did see your mom and your dad in a cameo there as well.
Yes, that was a highlight for us. You know, our family had opted to wait and see the movie at the premiere just for the fun and the experience of doing that. My parents had already seen the movie. And so we knew that there was a crowd scene where they were actually in the crowd. And then when that scene came up, it was just, like, fabulous because, you know, to see my mom and dad clapping and being in the movie and us knowing who they were, that was a real hit for us.
Now, am I right in if I categorize this film as a faith-based production?
Yes.
So one thing that some faith-based films have come under a lot of criticism for the way that they're released. They don't go through the usual marketing that most other films go through and are usually marketed through the churches. And so therefore, it becomes a exercise in preaching to the choir and that the messages of these films don't reach a large audience because of that. What would your response to that be?
Well, I do agree in many ways with that comment, and I think this is why they wanted this movie to be an exciting adventure for all audiences, and it's not a preachy movie, as you saw. It appeals to young and old, and I think you just walk away feeling really inspired. And I think that one of the ways that they've tried to kind of break the mold is using a distributor called CC that helped pre-sell tickets, particularly in Kansas City, and to see what the demand was. And they did sell 4,000 tickets, which has never happened before. So they are trying to kind of do things a little bit differently with this.
So CC is a new method for ticket sales. Is that what you're saying?
It is.
And is this the first film that's used this method of
It is not the first film. I think it was one of the first. I think there's just five or so that have used CC, and it worked out quite well. It helped identify where the market demand was and where to launch the premiere and really get some focus, and they were really great at getting marketing and PR out there.
And how would you what would you like to see happen to this film now? It's going to be rolling out, I guess, over time in a number of cities. Is that correct?
Yes, what we would love to see, and the idea is that Kansas City be the launch city, and it just makes perfect sense. I think it's going to be so interesting to so many people from Kansas City to see one of their own on the screen. And then the idea is that it roll out nationally in the spring. And there is already the book for this movie by the same writer who wrote the movie is already on shelves now.
How would you say that it's different than other faith-based films, or can you categorize it in that way?
I think it is very different because of the level of action. I think is surprising probably for a lot of people. I think the cinematography was absolutely astounding. You know, to get Davis Bunn, an award-winning writer, was a dream. There's a lot of faith-based movies I really, really enjoy, and some, you know, do come under a lot of criticism because maybe the filming wasn't up to speed, or maybe the script writing wasn't up to speed, or something. But this movie really, I feel, has it all.
I can attest that the movie is well-produced, and it's entertaining, and it should appeal to a mass audience if the mass audience learns about it.
Yes.
The,
I agree.
The real challenge, I suppose, on your part is to make sure that that gets out there because, you know, as you say, it's a different channel than what we're normally used to. A lot of movies have kind of these stealth openings when they're faith-based films. Matter of fact, there's a movie opening today called Red Wing with Bill Paxton, which is a faith-based film, and it has just opened and few people, I think, even know about it. So
that's probably true. And that has been one of the goals of getting a lot of grassroots efforts in Kansas City since it was coming to this area and there was so many tickets pre-sold. Then the idea was, let's get it out to the public. Let's let everybody know. And one of the ways is through this radio station. So we appreciate your time.
Well, there you go. Well, thank you so much, Susan. I really appreciate all of the information on the film. Once again, it's called Unlimited, rated PG-13. And you can see it in several places throughout the Kansas City area this weekend and I guess for the next few weeks, right?
Absolutely, and it's guaranteed for a week, and then it'll be renewed week by week after that.
Hey, Susan, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Take care. Once again, you're listening to KCUR, and we're the Movie Critics. I'm Russ Simmons, and I'm joined by Loey Lockerbie and also Michael Smith. And we are going to be talking about a few more movies that have opened up over the last few weeks. And I think it's probably very important that we cover the big Tom Hanks movie, and that is Captain Phillips. And if it's one that you want to talk about, give us a call, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCURCST. And, you know, director Paul Greengrass is best known for films like United 93 and The Bourne Adventures, and he has a very very distinct style. It's that docudrama style with a lot of handheld camera work, and it really works well for this true-life thriller, Captain Phillips. Tom Hanks plays the title character, and his cargo ship is overtaken by a small band of Somali pirates, and it's those convincing performances, not only by Tom Hanks and the other actors on the ship, as well as these non-professional actors that Greengrass recruited to play the Somali pirates, and they are very convincing. That skillful handheld camera work technique really adds to the movie's realism. And even though most of us know the outcome of the story, this movie still manages to build some tension. And that reminds me of another Tom Hanks film called Apollo 13. And I did have a chance to chat many years ago with Ron Howard about how on earth can you create tension in a movie where everybody knows the outcome. And he said, you do it by creating the tension in the individual scenes. They don't know what's going to happen in those individual scenes. So if you can manage that, then that will accumulate until ultimately, you know, there will be tension throughout the film. So that is a very interesting take. And it's a solid action thriller. I'm going to give it a 4, and it's Captain Phillips rated R. Oops, let me double check that rating. I'm not sure if I got that right. Captain Phillips is rated PG-13, excuse me. So it's out in theaters opening today. And now we have a call from Doc in Kansas City who wants to talk about another movie that opens today. Hi, Doc.
Hey, enjoy the show as always.
Thank you.
Yeah, I saw the poster for Escape from Tomorrow at the Tivoli, and I went online, and on IMDb, it's one of those people are either giving it 10s or 1s.
Yeah.
Some people said, oh, it's the worst piece of crap. And just wondered what the premise sounds really good, and I'm definitely going to see it. want to know what you've heard.
Yeah, it's an interesting movie. I have had a chance to see it. It is a film that was shot surreptitiously at Disney World. It's a micro-budget movie that kind of is a kick in the seat to Uncle Walt and everything that's corporate Disney. And it's kind of a weird sci-fi horror film that kind of reminds me of a David Lynch movie. It isn't quite as skillfully made as David Lynch's movies, but it is kind of interesting. A family on vacation at Disney World. The guy learns, he gets a phone call that morning that he's been fired. I believe it's their last day at the park, but he's not going to be able to go back to a job. And so he begins to hallucinate, or perhaps we think he's hallucinating, and starts to see all of these Disney characters looking evil all of a sudden. And then all these weird, bizarre things happen to him, the kinds of things that you would expect from a David Lynch movie. But it's very bizarre, and I just don't think that it quite lives up to the cleverness of its premise. You know, it has a lot of promise, and it's interesting, and I think there will be a lot of people that like it if you like that kind of offbeat movie making. The most remarkable thing about it is it actually got released, because Disney is one of the most litigious firms out there, and the fact that they managed to get it out there, it was a hit at Sundance, and then they managed to find distribution, and Disney did not put the brakes on it legally. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Probably don't want to draw attention to it.
Right.
You just go away.
Right. So that's my take on it. I would give it a 3 out of 5, Doc. Are you still there?
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm still going to see it. Sounds wild enough to me.
All right. Well, next time we're on.
I trust the Tivoli.
Yeah. Next time we're on, give us a call and let us know what you thought of it.
All right. Thanks.
And if you have questions, give us a call. 816-235-2888, or you can send us a note at KCURCST. Let's talk about that Inequality for All, Lowy. That's a documentary that features Robert Reich, the former labor secretary under President Clinton, and he tells about the income gap in America.
Yeah, this reminded me a lot of An Inconvenient Truth, in that it is part profile of this sort of crusading guy who's worked in government for many years, and also an exploration of a serious issue. The difference is, I think, that Inequality for All is kind of telling us everything we already know. An Inconvenient Truth was coming just as people were really starting to discuss global warming and climate change seriously, and it really laid things out in a very clear way for, you know, people who might not be experts on the subject. Inequality for All, we've been hearing these statistics about how the earnings of the top 1% and the rest of us the gap has been widening significantly over the past 30-odd years. There really aren't a lot of solutions offered or ideas for changing it. The movie explains very well, you know, the problem, and it gets into some of the roots of it. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, Reich is a very admirable guy, and you know, he's certainly bringing attention to an important issue, but it's just sort of depressing in a way, because so what is going on here is so entrenched that it almost seems like there's nothing that can be done. So, you know, it's interesting in just sort of informing you about the situation, but it really is not telling us anything we don't already know. So I would give it 3.
Yeah, I liked it a bit more than you did, I think, but I kind of tend to agree with you. Robert Reich is an interesting guy. He certainly has the chops. He's got the research, and the research is all well documented, and he shows it in a very painless way. So this is kind of a way, if you want to catch up on the data, this is a way to do that. But when it comes to solutions to the problem, that's the sort of thing that you need to continue to explore. That's why they send you off to his website, so he can give you his tips on things that he thinks we need to do to resolve that problem. But I thought it was interesting, so I'll give it a 4. And so between the two of us, that's a 3.5 for Inequality for All, rated PG. And Mike, quickly tell us about Machete Kills.
Machete Kills. If you grew up in the 70s or early 80s, I've spent a lot of time in a movie theater. You had your kung fu films, your sexploitation, your horror films with the ads, you know, banned in 30 countries. And that's what this is. Similar to the Grindhouse films that from the 70s, and even the homage that Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino did a few years ago. This is just straight up exactly what it sounds like. It's violent, a lot of action, a lot of clumsy one-liners, but that's what you're going to see. Danny Trejo just has that amazing face where his life is just there. I mean, back in the 60s, he spent a lot of time in prison, and he kind of built himself up. But you can just tell the wear on his face. You can see he's lived a hard life, and he's not ashamed to share it. Good guest cast. Cuba Gooding Jr. is in it. Antonio Banderas.
Lady Gaga.
And a new actor.
They're all playing the same part.
Yes, they're all the chameleon. And a new actor who goes by the name of Carlos Estevez now.
Yes, that's right.
Better known as Charlie Sheen. I enjoyed it. If that's what you're looking for, it's not art, but if you're looking for a couple hours of over-the-top violence and the occasional dirty word,
yeah.
Go see it.
And what's your rating?
I gave it 4.
I didn't like it quite as well as you. I think that it's kind of an exercise in overkill. I thought the joke has worn thin, so I'm only going to give it a 2.5. So between the two of us, let's give it a 3. Does that sound reasonable to you?
I wonder what we'll give the next one, which Machete Kills Again
in space. That's right. So that's Machete Kills, rated R, and boy, it earns that. I want to quickly also talk about a film that opened a few weeks back, and it's a completely appealing cast, wasted and thwarted by a trite script. It's called Baggage Claim, a romantic comedy that feels like a crash-landed out of a 1950s time warp. Paula Patton plays a flight attendant who's looking for a husband, and so she's doing everything she can to find that man, not aware that Derek Luke, her best friend, right under her nose, is the ideal candidate. It's so cliched. The sporadic laughs can't overcome that movie's tired moments. So I'm only going to be able to give it a 2, and that's Baggage Claim, rated PG-13. It's a romantic comedy that is well beyond its time. I want to thank all my fellow film critics, Michael Smith and Loie Lockerbie. And we have one other thing that we need to do before we wrap it up here. And I would just like to ask, if you were to only be able to recommend one film that's out right now in theaters, this is the one to see, what would it be?
Enough Said.
Enough Said, the romantic comedy with Julia Louis-Dreyfus and James Gandolfini. That's Loie's vote. How about you, Michael?
Right now, I definitely, Gravity.
Gravity, even though you gave a higher rating.
Yeah, even though I gave Prisoners, I don't think it's for everybody, but I can't see anybody not enjoying Gravity.
Yeah, outstanding movie, and that would be my pick as well, Gravity in theaters now. See it in IMAX and 3D if you can. Once again, thanks to Loie Lockerbie and Michael Smith. Central Standard returns on Monday with Nature in the City, a seasonal look at the nature in and around Kansas City. Up to Date is next with a look at the history of the Sunflower Ammunition Plant, and we'll get some personal stories from former workers. Our show today was produced by Matthew Long Middleton with Ross Steinmetz. I'm Russ Simmons. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your weekend.